listening to Making Good. I'm Renee Blanchard, founder and operator of Church Alley Cafe and Grocery, located here in New Orleans, Louisiana. Church Alley is a people-first, mission-driven small business that I opened in 2013. And the best part about owning a cafe is the people. So in this podcast, I interview the makers, the farmers, and the many interesting people I've met through the shops. The folks doing the good work here in Louisiana and all along the Gulf Coast. Let's get started.
My name is Faye Kimbrell. I am a born and raised New Orleanian, and I'm a social worker by training. I'm currently in private practice, so I do individual therapy with both individuals and couples. And what do you need to know about me? I went to school later in life, so I spent 15 years as a stay-at-home mom.
Oh, wow.
And I have three kids, two of whom are in college, so we're looking at an empty nest soon, which is exciting. And so this is kind of our phase three of life. And I'm excited to be here. Excited to share this space with my colleagues.
Sure. All right, my name is Krista Talbot. I feel like I'm New Orleanian. I've been here for 22 years now. I am a teacher, fresh out of the classroom. I don't like to say retired, but I did a little career pivot. Now I work in a little education consulting and ed tech, which has been a very interesting change, especially kind of like Faye. This is like phase two, switching careers and, you know, moving into something new. But excited about the opportunities and, you know, things that we have going on now. I'm also about to be an empty nester with Faye. I have two kids. One's in college. One is 16, going on 72. So I'm really happy to be here.
Hey, Renee. I'm Mariska Morse. My background is, went to school in Boston, was there for about 10 years. My career started in the area of marketing, so my functional expertise is definitely in marketing, then shifted into helping run a nonprofit for about 20 years, kind of in and out a little bit, and the nonprofit focused on women's leadership, helping women sort of be introduced to an MBA and sort of get on that pathway to leadership. I've been in New Orleans 12 years, actually this summer, and I've got three children. And similar to my colleagues, also, this venture is definitely a 2.0, a pivot. 2 years ago, I left the nonprofit to get a master's degree. And as I started that, began talking about this new business.
Well, thank you so much for being here. We've tried to do this before. And so I appreciate y'all's grace when I had allergies that were knocking me out completely in the springtime.
Yeah.
So I really appreciate y'all being here. And so I'm y'all from Salon 22. I was invited by a friend of y'all's, Katie Wintry, to come to an evening, you know, like a salon, and at their office space. And y'all had like a guest panel of people, of most of whom I knew, and then how many people did y'all have? How many women did y'all have? Like,
we had about 40-50 women. Yeah.
Which was really great because I knew like a quarter of them, right? And everyone knew a quarter of them. And so it was so interesting to like, you just got constantly pulled into introductions because we all knew enough people to be able to like have a conversation and meet someone new too. So this was like really interesting crowd of people. And then it was funny, I had run into people who I met there, you know, in different scenarios. And so I'm like continuing to so maybe we can just, if someone wants to like introduce Salon 22, like what this concept is and kind of how
Sure.
it started.
Yeah, Salon 22 is a women's social club with a co-working component, but mostly what we want is to be a social club. It's a proven concept around the country. There's lots of
and in
clubs.
History. This is like
and
a historical gathering place for women.
Correct. Yeah. So it's really rooted in the idea that, you know, we have more power together than we do individually, and how can we use that to create real change while enjoying ourselves in a beautiful space. So we're just really at a pivotal moment in history. There's so much going on, and if we don't get this ship, we're not going to make it, you know? I mean, the people who are in immense power are trying to explore Mars to set up, like, colonies.
Forget this situation.
Yeah, you know? I mean, I don't know that I'll be able to afford a condo on Mars. So I'm going to work at this planet. And what can we do, and how can we start to really just take this from a place where people, I don't know, I think that leadership until now comes from this place of like fear and lack, and what are you know, that like power is a finite resource, and I have to get it, and I need all of it. And I don't think that's necessarily where a lot of women come from. I think we're much more flexible in mind. I think we are nimble. We are creative thinkers. We're the creators of life. Like, we should be able to have a little bit more control over what's happening in the world around us and for our children, our grandchildren. So the idea is really just what happens when you bring together a group of women who are individually already feeling empowered or perhaps need support on an individual basis, but you're kind of waking up, you're coming into yourself, you know, or maybe you already know who you are, but you want to like meet other people. And what happens when you bring all that together, and what's the magic that can occur where you can really start to create big change from that place? So that's sort of the, I guess that's the nucleus of it all, is kind of, you know, coming out of our lanes. You know, New Orleans can still be such a segregated city. So what does it look like when you come out of your comfort zone? Even, you know, the event that you attended, Renee, and how just being able to like be in a space with people that you hadn't met before, and now you're seeing them. And like, what happens when you start to do that on a big scale?
Yeah, and on a regular basis. Yeah. Right? So idea of Salon 22 is it's a club, it's an organization that you join, and you would be, you know, coming to see it just like any social club on a regular basis. So the people that you meet, you will then be meeting ongoing and then building those sort of genuine, authentic, kind of deeper relationships as opposed to one-off.
Yeah, I think, you know, just to piggyback off of that is the intentionality of it as well, right? You know, Faye said that New Orleans tends to be, you know, a very segregated city, and I think that's true. I think it happens kind of naturally, and then it's you know, our safety zone, it's our comfort zone. And, you know, one of the things that drew me to Salon 22 was the idea of being able to, you know, bring together a very diverse group of women that mirror the city. And, you know, we always talk about how, you know, if I'm going out this weekend, my girlfriends are going to be Black. They're going to look like me, right? And though I have these wonderful friends who don't look like me, you know, our habits are, you know, that's not where I go. And so, you know, thinking about, there's so much division, period, in the world, in the country, in the city, in so many racially, economically, how can we start to try to bridge that gap? And how much power do we have when we recognize what we can do all together, right? Like, and that's not easy. That's not easy to say just because we recognize there's a gap, and so we're going to throw everybody in the room and boom, you know, kumbaya, you know, everybody's happy. Like,
and even when you have knowledge or skills on how to create those types of bonds, it doesn't even happen. It doesn't happen every time.
It doesn't. And you know, we're at a time. You know, a lot of people have been very upfront and honest with the question, you know, what are the members going to look like? Are they going to look like me? Like, am I going to have to deal with a person who, you know, asks me stupid questions about my hair or about, you know what I mean? Like, how is this, you know, you're saying it's a safe space. How are you going to do that? And I, you know, I'm very honest and upfront. It's not easy, and I don't have a plan. I just know that we are very intentional about bringing like-minded women to the table who are ready for this change, who are ready to come together. We have a lot of powerhouses in their own rights that affect so much change in the city, in their own sphere. What happens when we can bring that together? And it's time, you know, it's time. I think women are ready. You know, men have been doing it for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. And it's time for us to recognize our power together. And I think that we've proven with, you know, we've had a lot of pop-up programming and meetups. You know, we have, you know, almost 100 founding members, and we're building relationships, you know, and we might have a meetup and have 5 members come, but they're connecting and they're building these relationships. And that's, you know, again, like at the nucleus of who we are, is we're building this community of like-minded women who not only get together and have a good dance party with a DJ and some good food, but we also know that we're coming together to get stuff done.
Yeah, yeah. So how did this idea come about? Like, what was that first conversation? Like, and so people are pointing to you. So, yeah. And then what was your first thought of this brewing? And then who did you pull and what did you say to them?
So I was working as a case manager in a big group here. I'm not going to say what, but essentially I was working with kind of some of our most vulnerable populations and recognizing that we're so late in the game of how we can help individuals. It's just like putting Band-Aids on like this like gushing wound, right? So what's the real issue? What's the system? What's the systemic problems? Like, how do we start to fix things? And how does the world around me start to reflect my values? You know, because it just doesn't feel like it does a lot of times. And so kind of took a step back from that job and started to really think like what are my roots? What's important? I don't know if you know the Japanese term ikigai, but it's essentially like, what's your passion? What are you good at? Like, I'm not going to get it all right, but there's like these 5 different circles and like, what's your core thing and what can you do? How can you contribute to the world? What do you want to leave behind? Those sorts of things. So kind of started thinking about my life and that philosophy, and recognized that like women and women empowerment has always been just a huge part of who I am and what really sparks interest, and just feeling like so ready for, I want to live in a world that is run by women. I want to know what that looks like. We've seen the opposite, and like, it's great. There's so much wonderful things that have come out of our history. Like, I don't want to like throw the baby out with the bathwater, but what does it look like when women are running the show, and how is it different? Maybe it's just as violent. Maybe it's just as like insane, but like maybe not. And I think the pendulum, it's time for it to swing. So then you dial it back. What's your sphere of influence? How do you actually start to make things happen? How can you connect with other people? So anyway, that was sort of I spent a lot of time just like up in my head on all that. And then I read an interview that Mariska had given for Forte talking about male allyship. And I was like, oh, that's such an interesting idea. We should probably have male allies.
Male allyship, okay.
We should
get those.
Yeah, those are very useful. That feels like it would matter, yeah. Anyway, I've kind of been just shopping around for like, just talking to as many people as I could about the idea, knowing you don't do anything alone, right? Anyway, Mariska's enthusiasm is contagious, and she's just ready to go. And so we knew at that point that we needed to build a diverse team, of course, because if you're going to go out there and start talking to women about women's issues, you need to make sure that everybody's at the table and the representation is there, and that's who we right. want to be. So we reached out to Krista, who originally shot us down because it's a big talent. She's
yes,
like,
3 times.
Yeah.
Three times.
Yeah, she was just like, I don't want to be the black voice for a bunch of white ladies. Like, no thanks. Yeah. I'm set. And she'll tell her own story, of course, but was going, I think, through her own transition, just kind of trying to get away from having to be that voice for people. So anyway, we eventually convinced her, and then we brought on Fresh, who unfortunately isn't able to be here today, but brings her in set of amazing people, and here we are. We've been working together as a foursome team for about 2 years, plotting and planning and putting it all together, so yeah, it's the long of it, I guess.
Yeah, COVID was on our side, actually.
COVID was.
It was a lot of time to plan.
I mean, this podcast definitely came from COVID, right? Like, when we had to shut down, I was like, well, all of my friends' businesses are shut down too. So let me pull everyone I know, and I can deliver all, you know, we can all sell each other's goods, and I can deliver them. And that's how how it started. I was like, well, let me tell the story of each of those businesses, you know? So now we're on the second season. That's a little bit different. We're kind of yeah, do you want to talk about why you decided to do this after?
Sure. Like Faye said, I think I've been in a season of transition for a couple of years now. As a teacher for 20 years, definitely is my passion. I love children. I love teaching.
What grade or what age?
I started in elementary school with actually first and second graders. I know. Didn't love first grade as much. Second grade was really cute. Hated kindergarten. Like, I subbed in a kindergarten class one time, and I was like, God bless you all. Don't ever call me. Like, I could not believe how much I was like, it was anyway. But ended up teaching fourth and fifth grade literacy. Really, really loved fifth graders. And then moved up to sixth grade, world history, social studies. And social studies is really my passion as far as, you know, just historically speaking. And so was teaching social studies to sixth graders for about 14 years. So that was definitely my comfort zone. I am a 12-year-old at heart. I'm not ashamed to admit that, but definitely loved it. Loved teaching, still do. But, you know, I think the transition happened, you know, kind of forcefully, kind of naturally, like given where we are. We had the pandemic. Had George Floyd. The school where I was teaching, there was definitely a lot of tension around race and around just some different things that I started to be more vocal about. And just in that process, kind of really starting to come into my strength and power as a Black woman. Like, I've always been proud of being a Black woman, but I don't think, and I think this is with women in general, like I feel like we hit a stage where we recognize our power and who we are. And, you know, it comes with wisdom, it comes with time. And I think it was just my time. And I'm still learning, I'm still transitioning. And so I was still in the classroom when Faye and Marissa reached out to me and had been in a few situations where, you know, even at work, like I was, you know, one of very few Black teachers in the school who spoke for, you know, all of the Black students. Right. And it gets exhausting. Not only is it exhausting, it's also just, it's unrealistic to expect one person, right, to be the voice. But I think that has been the common thread for so long in our country is that, you know, oh, you know, here's a Black person. Right. They can tell us your experience. And I'm like, no, my experience is my own. I can't speak for a whole population of people. And so coming into this, that's when I kind of felt like I went to one event. You know, of course, there were people of color there, but it still just felt very, and, you know, I'm really happy and proud that I was able to be open and honest with that answer because, you know, a year before that, I would not have been able to say no because I just, you know, made up something. Oh, it sounds good. I'm not interested. But to be able to say, you know, no, I just, you know, don't want to be that voice. And so both ladies being very open to hearing my reasons and talking with us and the pandemic in that aspect, I think, gave us the opportunity to have these open conversations to, you know, be on the same page they wanted to, you know, what will it take? How can we be more representative? You know, and that's when we started talking about having another, you know, our fourth person being a person of color as well. And that's what really made me comfortable. But that's really what officially drew me in, is that knowing that we were creating this diverse space where we could trust each other enough to say, no, because I'm a Black woman and this is what I feel. Do you know what I mean? And to be able to own it and call it. And that's what we're trying to do with salon membership in general. And, you know, it took us a year of conversations and building trust, and we recognize that's what we need to do, you know, with salon. But that's our goal, is that we, that's what's missing. We haven't been able to be open and honest with each other. And so, you know, we came together, and, you know, I feel very comfortable And it's kind of like the name Salon 22, you know, for women in the Black community, the salon is where we go. You know, I used to go to the salon every week, and those were my people, and I got to vent about life and about kids and, you know, got inspiration and walked away with a beautiful hairdo. Right?
Yeah.
And then,
looking good, feeling good.
Right? And then the salon and the enlightenment and empowerment, you know, of, you know, in that community of coming together and thinking outside of the box and having conversations. So it applies to, you know, our community as well. Like it brings us all together. And then 22, when we're moving into the 22nd century, we're creating the world we want for our children and our grandchildren. And we get to be an agent of change. And so, yeah, that's the long and short of
It wasn't a simple decision.
It was not.
I mean, I think I have told y'all before already is that was also one of the most diverse spaces I had been in New Orleans. You know, New Orleans, we live right up on each other, but that doesn't necessarily mean when we go into restaurants, it's like all white or it's all Black or it's all Asian, right? And that's kind of what we live in.
That's one of the things that we recognized, like that was definitely an aha, like sort of light bulb moment at a certain point, actually right before the pandemic I had was, how is it that I chose to live in this city for, you know, to be in an area that is diverse. I didn't want my children to grow up in a homogeneous, you know, suburb of Maryland. I wanted them to grow up in a diverse city, yet my circle was still very homogeneous. So how did that happen? And what I came to the conclusion is the only way that's going to take a change is with intentionality. Yeah. And that's really what we want Salon 22 to be, is for women to know that they can come somewhere with intention to meet other women outside of their circle. And that there is a way to actually grow your network in new ways that feels comfortable. And that's what we're going to create, is a space where women can either like find a familiar that you wouldn't necessarily meet going down your path in life, but that you want. Because the city is full of amazing, smart, incredible women, but we're just not necessarily crossing paths. Or being able to cross paths in a way that's natural to then build a relationship that's meaningful and authentic, as opposed to just some sort of professional service relationship.
Yeah.
So this allows women to connect in a deeper way on an ongoing basis.
Yeah. What you said your background is in marketing, and so what is kind of your role in this?
Well, funny enough, yes, my functional expertise has been marketing. And when I helped run the nonprofit, I did a lot of marketing, I did account management, but I never really got into sort of with that nonprofit, sort of the operations side. And so my role right now is kind of more the legal, the accounting, sort of the business setup, the business development. So I'm kind of available, you know, as a team for marketing, but that's not necessarily the hat I believe. And that was, again, intentional on my side of wanting to learn new skills.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to see a side of like setting up a business that I hadn't been involved in before. So a lot of it's new for me.
That's exciting. I love hearing y'all talk about like this next season, and like this is like the Salon 22 is like part of your next season of like what you're doing.
Learning so much. It's really exciting.
Yeah, it's real. So I'm going back to school now for another degree to be a registered dietitian, and like I'm 42, and so one of the really interesting things to sit in these classrooms and take these classes is I had no idea that there are things that I can learn and be excited about that I didn't already know. And I know that sounds silly, but it's also like at some point you're so on your path and you know where you're going that you don't even know the things that excite you.
Don't consider, right?
Yeah.
Consider something else.
Yeah. And so I love hearing that, just because I think that that's probably true for women as you get into your 40s anyway. Like you kind of have to like do something a little bit different.
Yeah. Too many transitions.
Yeah. Can y'all just, or someone talk about like, what is the day-to-day? Like, what is your vision for the day-to-day of Salon 22? So you're getting a space.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. So it really is like a clubhouse or a place that we can go to and spend time like every single day, or like what is that? What does that day look like?
Yeah, we have right now our hours, we're thinking Monday through Friday with events on Saturdays, but like in 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., we're open. And Mariska likes to talk about kind of the main street.
Main street strategy, which is the idea where at any point in the day, there's going to be some value for our members. So someone might come in the morning for a yoga class and then pull out their computer and do some work in the shared co-working space and then grab a bite to eat with a client or a friend. Or someone else might come in the afternoon and do a little bit of work and then stay for the happy hour and, you know, grab a box dinner to go home or something. So it's really just looking at how members will use the space on an ongoing way, and that there's always going to be something for everybody at every point of the day. From a programming perspective, we're looking at everything from sort of a weekly curated event to a monthly speaker, a quarterly workshop. It's all about personal and professional advancement. But that's whole health as well. So we want to provide the fitness, we want to provide the good nutrition, and, yeah. And obviously the professional piece is important, not just from I pivoting in my career or I need to update my resume, but certainly that network or that community. And that's why the daily happy hours are going to be critical so that people can be connecting on an ongoing basis. So at the end of the day, being sure that there's value for our members from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m.
Wow, I didn't realize that. I didn't realize it was that much. And it's 7 days a week or just during
Monday through Friday. And that's kind of special events on the weekend. We realize that people are very family oriented on the weekend.
Yeah.
So we'll be open for whatever might come up on the weekends, mm-hmm. but really kind of focus during the week.
Yeah. And I think our membership levels sort of reflect that too. We have, I'm not going to be able to pull all the words we've used off the top of my head, but it kind of like people who already have an office, but maybe just want to come for more of like the networking and the social aspect.
Okay.
Then we have people who really are, you know, working from home, but a couple days a week would love to maybe be around other people. And then we have like the kind of the, you get everything level. So it's like, you get to have the programming, you get to have the access to the space, the networking, all the things. So.
Yeah.
And we're trying to steer away from the word networking, but I can't remember what we
connecting.
Yeah.
Networking might, you know, it turns a lot of people off. Like, it makes my anxiety surprise.
It does.
Like,
me too.
Networking. Yeah. Like, I have to talk about this. What? Yeah. No. Right. So,
right.
You
connecting.
Know, technically, you know, we
hanging
are,
out.
But we're, you know, we don't want that, you know, rise
chilling.
In blood pressure, you know, when you hear it. I don't think that exists.
Oh, is my 90s showing?
But yeah, definitely connecting, because I think it goes beyond networking in that, you know, you're building a relationship.
Yeah.
It's not a one time,
yeah.
Here's my business card,
yeah.
Thank you for yours. We may or may not do business together,
yeah.
Or connect, but like, yeah, this is what I do, this is what you do. We can help each other, but we're also talking, and I'd love to have coffee and learn more about you, Renee. Like, you know, we're building these relationships that then lead to naturally how we are helping each other,
right?
You know,
yeah.
In a networking sense.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, it's bigger in my mind and better and easier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
networking lends itself to exchanging business cards. This
yeah.
is where we're actually belonging to the same club, right? We're in a relationship, right? The members were introducing themselves to a really important relationship with each other.
Yeah.
And that's really, if you go back to bridging the gap, what's going to bridge the gap? Because it's the relationship where you'll be able to have these important conversations and feel like there's trust and respect, which you can't do at a fundraising luncheon,
yeah.
Where you exchange business cards, and those are important, but this is very, very different. This is an ongoing relationship.
Yeah. I went just about networking. I have literally walked out before, like where you like listening, and I was like, I cannot handle another second of this.
Yeah.
Or like one time I went to, I thought was a panel discussion, and then I had run into someone who I did know. And she's like, oh, yeah, before the panel starts, we all introduce ourselves to the entire group. And I was like, I tried back and walked out.
Just got to call.
It's going to go.
I know. And I think we can figure that out. I know once you get, like, a few of our programming, there's been,
yeah.
like, a circle. And people are like, oh, my God, circle talk.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just like, it's It's not always comfortable for anybody.
And we're all a little heightened right now, too.
It's true. We've been off our social game. Yeah. But also, I'm just kind of thinking about what, even in terms, I mean, I know, again, we're sort of like laughing at networking, but, you know, I mean, part of the reason why some people get to climb the ladder and other people don't is because of who you know and who you meet. And it's one of the things that, you know, us remaining divided in the city does. I think I'm thinking of like Live Oak Camp, where like their whole thing is like, let's bring the kids of this city together so that they can start to network at this young age, because they're thinking, you know, when you send your kid off to camp and like, who do they know? And boarding schools and all those places where you kind of make those connections for life. So, you know, we will be adult summer campish.
Yeah. We can rename it, but it's camp.
When you think just about, you know, why I come from an environmental nonprofit background. So it's like, I think climate change, right? And like my business has been impacted greatly by the changing climate, about how big the storms are now, not just the hurricanes, but yesterday's storm that knocked out power both in my home and my business, you know, and nearly flooded again. And so it's like, how are we moving forward, right? Like I've done work on these big picture issues, but like, literally, like, how are we going to survive this changing climate? And what we see in New Orleans or along the Gulf Coast year after year is it's our small communities, it's our small network, you know? It's like, at the beginning of the pandemic, I literally, like, I'm a community organizer by trade, so I literally emailed every business person I knew on one email, and I was like, what the fuck is going on? Like, what are you doing? How are you protecting your staff? How are you dealing with this? And we, throughout the first year, we had this email chain of like 20 different business owners, and we were just sharing information as we had it. And that was crucial. We couldn't be in silos at that moment. In time. We needed, and I mean, we would exchange, get on the phone and help people log into there, you know, to get the loans or the grants. And like, this is what I did. This is how I answered that call. And that was so crucial.
Yeah. And I think what you're talking about, though, y'all created a system that worked for you because it was what you could manage. It's what you already knew. And it's the people you knew. And I think
that's
we're kind of trying to get to ultimately is like, we're going to have to be the change we want to see.
Yeah.
We're going to have to start at a level that feels manageable, creating systems that actually work for us. And so what exactly that looks like and what exactly that means, I think, is, again, speaking to women's strengths, which is coming together and figuring that out collectively.
Yeah.
So,
and that's, you know, one of the goals of our programming as well. And that's, you know, my area. You know, I always tell the story. It's like, you know, going to these events, we're going, you know, to something and they're talking about the environment, climate change, and, you know, me going home like, yes, okay, don't throw that away and turn the water off and save the lights. But then it's like, you have this enthusiasm, this excitement, but then that's it, right? Like, it's, and you put it down because life comes back, and then you're done, right? And what we want salons programs to be is that we're giving you this information, we're teaching you, we're bringing in guest speakers, we're having these conversations, and we're learning, but we're not stopping there, right? Like, okay, we have this information, now let's make a plan. Kind of like you did with the email, like, you know, let's plan. How are we going to do this together? And then let's actually act. So it's like learn, plan, act. And so then we can channel all of that energy that we have after learning something and you know, be able to do something with it versus it just being, oh, I know that's really important. I wish there was something I could do. I have no idea what to do. Like, you know, even with everything happening in the world today, you know, I try not to watch the news, which, you know, sometimes I'm embarrassed to say this as a teacher, but then, you know, to protect myself, like my own sanity, I don't, because when I'm watching, I feel so impassioned and so, like, what can I do? How are we going to stop this? How are we going to change it? And I feel powerless, you know, by myself. But the hope is that when we bring everybody to the table, we can use who's at the table to then make a plan of action and actually be able to channel that into making changes, like you said, in our communities, in these small groups that will eventually impact the larger community.
And I feel like New Orleans specifically, like we, you know,
10 years ago, or even 6, 7, 8 years ago, New Orleans was in a great place, right? And we have seen, not that where we are now is not a place we haven't already seen in our lifetimes in the city and on the Gulf Coast, but we have slid in a lot of ways where we saw a promise after Katrina that did not come, you know? And now we're like, now what do we do? And we can see that, what, like, yesterday it came out that New Orleans is once again the highest murders in the United States. And we know what that feels like. We grew up in that, but now it's something else. And so it's like we have, I think it's an interesting part too, is that we have all these new people that have come here that have new ideas and have, and the ones that have stayed now after this moment.
It's also known to be the worst state in the country for women to live.
Right.
So that is a very big driving factor for Salon, is how do we elevate the status of women?
Yeah.
I mean, personally, I often think, how did I end up in Louisiana? How did I end up living in the worst state for women? But then that goes back to my aha moment. I was put here for a reason, right? I was in this career supporting women's leadership, and now I'm in Louisiana, which is like, has the worst economic security, the worst maternal health, the largest pay gap. You name the data point, and we are the worst.
Yeah.
So, but that's why we need a collective of powerful women that are ready to affect change. That's the only way it's going to happen, is if we put our voices together. Because everyone in Baton Rouge right now that are keep voting down the ERA for the 19th time, they don't care. And they don't care that there's a minimum wage of $7.25. They don't care that women are earning 69 cents on the dollar, and women, Black women, are earning 47 cents on the dollar. They don't care at all. But we need to care, which is why Salon needs to come together and invest in ourselves first and foremost, so that we can get to a place of position of power, and then together create a platform to affect change.
Yeah.
And whether it's the environment or violence or maternal health, there's, the list is long.
Choice.
Very long. Yeah, choice, body autonomy.
I mean, when I told my dad, I moved back home in 2010, my dad was in Florida. When I told him I was moving back, he's like, do not move back to Louisiana. Like, that was his only advice. He had nothing else to say to me, you know? And he was like, what do you do? He's like, we left for a reason. And like, we're from a small, we're not from New Orleans, we're from Lafayette, New Iberia, Opelousas, Crowley, like that's where we're from. And it's like, we cannot go back. And it's been interesting to do it anyway, and like, see what he meant.
His parents, they always hang now.
Okay.
Yeah. Gotta learn your lessons yourself.
Yeah. But you talk about like what's happening in Baton Rouge, and like, I just keep, you know, since we're like 2 weeks out from Roe today, right? Like 2 hours ago, the trigger law finally got put in place. Or they're still appealing every day, whatever, but we don't know. But now it's still here. And, you know, you're hearing like, oh, you got to vote more. I was like, I've been voting for 25 years.
Yeah.
Right. And I always lose, and that's fine. And I will keep voting, but like, there is more to do than just voting. That is like the beginning. That's the very first thing you do, is vote for a candidate you believe in. And then you get to work and do other stuff.
Well, and I mean, I don't know the rates, so I'm not going to try to pull up a percentage, but the percentage of people who do actually vote is so small. I mean, so you have these massive systems that are getting run by a minority. Like, it just, none of it makes sense anymore, and none of it's working. And so I guess I just, I'm so sick of playing a game whose rules were never made for me.
Yeah.
This was, none of this was for me ever. Yeah. So what do we do? And again, don't have the answers, but I'm ready to figure it out, because this isn't okay. Yeah. But I guess I also just want to bring up that there are so many organizations who have been doing this work for a very long time.
Yeah.
And by no means are we trying to reinvent a wheel or come up, you know, our hope is very much to be the clubhouse for all of that thought. And so we are working to sort of partner with other organizations and groups who have been doing a lot of this work forever and don't necessarily need our brilliant new questions, but probably have a lot of experience and insight already.
Yeah, I think that's what I've been really amazing working on the Gulf Coast and in Louisiana specifically, is that these are the best activists, right? Like all the way around for generations are the best activists on the Gulf Coast because they have survived and thrived in the most oppressed situations. You know, I think we have a lot to learn in how to move forward on these other issues. Is there anything else that y'all want to talk about specifically about?
I feel like that was also hit.
I know.
No, that's what I was about to say. I was like,
that's
I just
like
so
to break and have fun. I like to move it around.
You know, we can talk about our glam jams, right?
Yeah.
You know, we're not just about, you know, we are very serious and clearly very passionate about the work that we
yeah.
want to do and that we need to do. But we also recognize, you know, that we as individuals, that's a very small portion of who we are
yeah.
and what we need and what drives us and what, you know, brings us joy. And so, you know, we do have things like our glam jam. And I think glam jam was gorgeous ladies always making moves.
Yeah.
And it's like a good old house party. You
yeah.
know what I mean? Like me personally, I'm over the club. I'm, you know, 45 yeah. years old. I'm at the point where I've taught so many kids and
you're
my daughter
running
is
into
from,
them.
Like literally at a bar. It's like, my name, Miss Talbot. And I'm like, okay. I'm not really having drinks with this kid. So, you know, I'm just, you know, I'm ready for a space that's mine and
yeah.
that's safe and that, you know, I can go have, you know, as many cocktails or no cocktails
yeah.
as I want with no judgment and it's safe. And, you know, our house party, it's literally, we have a great DJ, we get some good finger foods, which, you know, who doesn't love, and
yeah.
we dance. Like, you know, we come dressed up and end up barefoot and sweating and just, you know, or, you know, sitting on a couch and just having conversations. But, you know, we recognize that that's important too. Like we need that space to breathe and to be and to not carry so
yeah.
much heaviness that we have to carry every day. Like
yeah.
we want to be that place where we can come put it down because
yeah.
that's equally as important for us to be effective. Like we have to have this idea of self-care and, you know, the whole woman. And there's a lot of pieces to the whole woman. And so, you know, Salon 22 is also like, you know, we are a hub for so many things. And part of that is just a good time. Like, I just want to hear a good song and I want to pretend like I can still like drop it to the floor.
Drop it like that.
And bring it up very slowly without judgment from really young people who are really bringing it back up quickly. So, you know, that's another piece of who we are.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it's also a social club in every aspect of being social and having fun
yeah.
and enjoying each other and enjoying life, you know,
yeah.
to the best of our ability.
Yeah. And are y'all doing this full time or is everyone still working? Y'all all have something else that y'all are still doing. Wedding.
It's a side hustle for sure.
Yeah.
Part of the benefit of Four Partners is that we will be staffing it ourselves full time. We will have a part time staff person, but for the most part, you will see one of our faces every day. So,
yeah.
And remote work was a big part of that, like being
yeah.
able to work from home. You know, that's
yeah.
my primary job is remote, so I can be in, you know, at Salon. So yeah, I mean, ultimately, I would like to be able to say yes.
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 You know, it's
the dream.
I made this.
The,
now I'm here.
And, you know, I believe 1,000%. You know, it's time.
Yeah.
It's time. It's time for us as women. It's time for us. It's just humans on this planet. Like it's time. And I think that's the driving force for us is that, you know, everywhere we go, everyone we talk to, like it's just we recognize the need for something like Salon 22.
Yeah, another place mm-hmm. to have a conversation. I mean, I was one coming from organizing. One of the reasons I wanted to have a coffee shop is that almost all of the work I'd ever been had done had been in coffee shops,
mm-hmm.
like literally meeting people in In restaurants,
right? That's where you would meet up.
Yeah, to have those conversations or to continue conversations. And I was like, well, this is, and I love waiting. I love being in restaurants and waiting tables. And so this was like, oh, well, let me just do this now.
Smart. That's very smart.
Mix these things, but we
passions together.
Yeah, but we need a space to have. Yeah, to have a little bit more, you know, intention conversation. And work, and you know, and good conversations do come from when you're also just hanging out with no agenda.
Yeah.
And you are sitting next to someone for a long period of time, and you're like, I'm just thought about this. You know.
Yes. Exciting. Just natural.
Yeah.
Naturally.
Right. Yeah. So one question that I keep asking people is, what is your like best or most important failure? I don't know if someone wants to start.
I don't want to start.
Okay.
I guess, you know, I've had many. And I think I have on, you know, a certain level, but I'll say, okay, there, so when I was teaching about 5 years ago, I'm Lifetime certified here in Louisiana, but they also have a national board certification where essentially you go through this certification to be able to teach anywhere, and it's very exclusive, it's very expensive, and a couple of my colleagues, you know, were going through it, and I'm like, oh, I've been teaching for 20 years, like, well, at that time, 15, like, you know, I should do this, and it was very much, in my mind, like a prestige, right? Where I'm supposed to grow in this profession of teaching and learn more and be amongst, you know, the best of the best. And so I did. I started it, and it ends. There's like three parts, and one of the last parts is a test, and a really big test. And so, you know, I'm in social studies, and you know, a lot of people don't realize how vast social studies is, right? Like, there are so many different courses just under that umbrella. You know, you have civics, you have world history, you have U.S. history, you have economics, which I hate. You have civics. Like, there's so many. It's huge. And so, like, I studied for forever. I was getting up at, like, 4 o'clock in the morning, and I would study until it was time to get ready for work because that was the only time where my brain was fresh. And I studied so hard for that, and I failed, and was devastated.
Yeah.
Was devastated because, I mean, I'm an excellent teacher. Like, I do believe that. I believe that of myself. I believe that my students knew how much I cared and knew how much I invested in them. And so to then come to something that is supposed to exemplify that and fail and not do it, like, it was just like,
yeah, shocking.
Yeah, it was, you know, and it was, you know, and then, you know, failure is embarrassing.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, and I've been working towards this, and of course, you know, my colleagues passed it, you know, they're in the newspaper, I'm just like, and they're young, like, you know, they've been teaching way less time than I have, but the thing about failure that's hard to see when you're in the moment is, you know, I'm a firm believer that everything happens for a reason. And I think that was kind of the precipice of me, like, starting to think about who am I, right? What am I supposed to be doing? Is this it? And, you know, still was very much like, oh, yeah, I'll probably retire from teaching. But it made me do a lot of self-reflection. And I did. I was depressed and sad and cried for a while. And, you know, but ultimately, now that I look back on that, like, that was just the beginning of the shift into the wisdom I referred to earlier, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you have to fall down.
Yeah.
You have to fall down in order to appreciate getting up.
Yeah.
So in order to appreciate moments when you feel like everything is just awful, but you're like, wait. And right,
is
like,
it,
really?
Was it this kind of
is it awful, Krista? Are you being dramatic? I think you're being dramatic.
Yeah.
and to show you that you can come back, right? Mm-hmm. Like you can come back. And it's hard to recognize that in the moment. And even still, like, you know, I had another, what I considered a failure with work that led to something better. But in the moment I was like, again, like, are you serious? Like I wasn't good at that. And I would, you know, but I'm gonna stop talking. But I just think, you know, what I've learned from these bigger failures that I've had is that, and I, you know, will play this podcast for myself when I'm in those moments, but it's hard to remember this in the moment, but that you, you know, you get up, you dust yourself off, and you're stronger, you're smarter, and you keep going.
Yeah.
So.
That's good. That was an existential failure. Like, I didn't, like, I can't recall a specific event, although I'm sure there are several. But I think what is coming up as I'm listening to Krista talk is just that feeling of not living up to my potential.
Yeah.
Knowing that I was a smart kid, but kind of probably had some learning stuff that just didn't really, it wasn't a thing back then,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so just kind of always knowing that I could be doing something or would, you know, that feeling that there's something more,
yeah.
And how come I'm not quite getting there has come with me for a long time. Like, I feel like I've carried that for a while. And it's part of probably what all this is
yeah.
that, like, I'm going to figure this out and create what I need to create, kind of pick myself back up from just sort of that feeling of I'm meant for more or something.
Yeah. Or that, like, creates a curiosity in you.
Yeah.
I'm still curious. I'm still interested. I'm still, like, trying to look at all the things.
Yeah, exactly. So.
What about you?
there's plenty, but I think the one that's probably always stood out to me is not completing my MBA. And that felt like a big failure on many levels. It had, you know, it was one of those where I sort of made all the wrong choices in the sense of, like, I didn't study for the GMAT when I should have, or if I did, I didn't study hard enough. And then this low score, like, didn't get me to apply. It's basically what a lot of women go through in terms of second guessing the analytics, second guessing whether you should get an MBA. And literally my father said, why would you leave the job you're in? You're making so much money.
Yeah.
When he had an MBA.
Yeah.
And you would hear that from employers, you know, like,
yeah.
Oh, you don't need to get that. And so really second guessing myself the whole way. And then finally actually applying, getting into some great schools, but then ultimately deciding, no, my husband should get his first and then I'll get mine while we start a family. Horrible idea. Horrible idea. And so I just sort of felt like I made a lot of wrong decisions. And they were very, what I would call gender typical.
Yeah.
Of picking the less expensive option, of putting others first before my own career. And then you know, and then I did start the MBA while I started having children. And so I was nursing while I'm going to class.
Wow.
And that was a really bad idea. And then we ended up moving once I was halfway through the MBA. And then basically the family kept growing. And so I didn't make the effort to transfer the credits, yada, yada, yada. So, and I was sort of stuck with a half MBA. And that gets you nowhere.
Yes.
You can put it on your resume. 50%.
A little battery.
But it was sort of like this degree that I always wanted. You know, my sister had a PhD, my brother, you know, so it's also like a little bit of a competitiveness going on and sort of being aware of that, but just feeling like that was a box I wanted to check. It was an education, it was a milestone I wanted to have. And so ultimately I decided, well, and half MBA is going to be what it is. And guess what? I am going to put it on my resume because, you know,
yeah.
That was $30,000. So.
Yeah.
and a good amount of work. But then I decided to get my master's in gender studies and talk about sort of things happen for a reason. It ended up, quite frankly, being a much more valuable education because for the last 2 years, I've been learning an area of knowledge that I'm so interested and passionate about, whereas the MBA was really a skill set that I already had. You know, I had been in business for 25 years, so everything that I was learning in an MBA, I had already been doing. Whereas now, pursuing my master's, it was a whole sort of area of academic expertise that I never would have learned on my own had I not gone through the master's program. So I actually feel a lot more knowledgeable now with that decision than had I fulfilled the MBA and not done the master's degree.
Yeah, I mean, and I can imagine that in some of your research in your gender studies master's now is the exact decisions that you were making all along the way.
Yes, and funny enough, the nonprofit that I ended up helping to run was all about promoting women to get an MBA. Wow. And so a lot of the decisions that I made along my path were ones that I could then counsel other women about, kind of, I've done this, here's what not to do.
Yeah.
don't count yourself short, you know, have the confidence, go get a little bit of skills. Most importantly, invest in yourself.
Yeah.
Because I think what we do as women is we go to the TJ Maxx, you know, instead of the expensive degree, because we think like, oh, I don't want to spend all that money. Whereas actually we do need to invest in ourselves.
Yeah.
There couldn't be a better investment than education in yourself, because you see the return over the course of your career. And we think like, oh, but I'm going to have kids and so I don't need it. You know, but actually you do, because your career is long, your life is long, and we're all so blessed. And so that return on the education is lifelong, you know, it's lifelong learning.
Yeah. So. I was listening to that podcast today, You Can Do Hard Things, with Glenda.
Glenda Doyle.
Yeah, and Abby. They have Natalie Portman on today.
Yeah.
And it was interesting because she owns that women's soccer league in LA. And
right.
Abby is the
she was on the Olympic team.
Wambach, yeah. And so I didn't realize it was Natalie. I just assumed it was Abby and the other women who were soccer players that did it, but it was Natalie Portman who was like, I want to do this, and found this, all these people to do it with her. And they were asking her, they're like, well, how do you do all this? She's like, I just pretend I'm a man. She's like, because I don't know. She's like, I don't know. You know, she was in that ballerina movie, whatever. She's like, I'm not a ballerina. I just pretend that I know how to do it. She's like, and I do the same thing when I'm making decisions. She's like, that's how men have been making decisions for all along. And not that we're trying to emulate men, because that is a whole other feminist issue. It's the confidence that we don't innately.
We want to be perfect at it before we go
for it.
Whereas they're just going to go for it and then like figure it out.
Yeah.
We're doing the like, is it good enough? Did I do it all right? Is it all okay? You spend so much time in that space of like getting ready for it. Exactly.
Yeah.
Which is what God gave me the confidence of a mediocre white man.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah, I think that's been a lesson for all of us in
this business.
In doing Salon 22, it's just sort of like, all right, you know, this is not, we're not going to come out like incredibly perfect, but we're going to, it's time to just, we're going to make decisions. We're going to get our doors open. We're going to go for it. We're going to,
we're raising our seed capital right now. And the first time where I pitched and someone was like, I was like, felt so hurt.
Yeah.
You know, again, have the confidence to just, you know what, you're going to hear 10 no's before you hear a yes, and we have to just keep going because we believe in this and we know this is the right thing to do.
Yeah, and you never really know what that initial thought turns into, what that initial idea turns into. You meet people along the way that help you move it.
Yeah, creative journey.
Something else.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've had some incredible yeses, unexpected, and they've just been blessings. And they've been sort of the wind in our sails.
Yeah. So how do people, are y'all still getting members? Like, are y'all, what, how do people get involved, or how do people, or are y'all?
Anyone that's interested can go on our website, so salon22nola.com, and you can sign up to be a founding member. We have a few spaces. We're trying to get to 100, but more importantly, if you just want to learn about the organization, you can sign up and sort of be added to our newsletter list. And then the plan is to open our doors by December. So definitely join once we open doors in December. Yeah, but yeah, sign up so that you can, so people can stay in touch with us.
Mm-hmm. And we'll include all that as well. Well, thank you all so much for sitting here and talking to me. I really appreciate it. It's so interesting. I was so interested that first night, that first event, and then just like we've met a couple times and just like, this is so interesting.
Yeah.
I want to sit in there.
Please come. Thank you for having us. I think this gives us a boost too, is to be able to just share how passionate we are and how much we believe in it, and to know that, you know, you're interested and other women are interested. So thank you for giving us the platform to be able to share.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Renee.
Yeah. Well, it's Friday afternoon.
Actually, I have a day retreat with each other tomorrow.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Just doing
planning, hashing out some details.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Good thing I like you.
That's all for today. Thanks so much for listening to Making Good. You can find our podcast on all the platforms you find your favorite podcasts. You can also find a transcript of this episode and all of our episodes on our website, churchalley.store. If you loved this episode, please share it and let others know about the good work of Church Alley Cafe and Grocery. Thanks again for listening to Making Good. I hope you have a really good day. We'll see you next time.